Hey, everybody. The sound is Matt Bolton. Time out with Patty C. Every time we have an episode now, I keep forgetting to define the show. The show is basic and simple. We're stuck in timeout, and this is what goes through our heads when we're stuck in timeout. But now we're still stuck in Battle of the Bands. We are now over on the right side of the bracket. We're doing two sides tonight. We're calling it Bracket B, and we have a lot of bands. We've knocked out the little guys, 1, 2, and 3, and now the big boys are coming in. But before we even go on record for today, there was a passing this past week, and too bad Lee isn't here. And it's Tony Kitan. Am I mispronouncing it? Does anybody know?
Kitan.
And she passed away, and we talked about Whitesnake's killer video that propelled them to stardom when she was on top of his car. And it was I think she was either married to or dating David Coverdale at the time. So we'll have a moment of silence for her. And it's just too bad Whitesnake couldn't go through. But maybe we'll have a B bracket one of these days after we get back into the swing of things. But hey, listen, the first two bands, Led Zeppelin, Pretenders. Tough one for me. My brother got me into Led Zeppelin. B, I got into the Pretenders early with Pretenders, Pretenders 2, and Learning to Crawl. Who wants to chime in right now? Big Mike, what do you got for us?
I mean, a lot of this has to do with where we were, right, in the time of our lives that these came in. So the Pretenders might have hit you, right, at a time when it meant a lot to you. But for me, Led Zeppelin did. I was just becoming a teenager aware of what, like, older music was because they weren't around really anymore. And I thought I understood them. You know, I heard Stairway. It introduced me to other songs, and I kind of was introduced to, like, Kashmir. And I was like, "What is this? The immigrant song? Like, are these guys like Metallica? You know?" And it turns out Metallica is really like. But then they've got, like, the Rain song and some really endearing, like, softer side.
Yep.
And so they kind of cover the entire spectrum of awesomeness for me. And so Led Zeppelin is a kind of a clear favorite here for me.
Yeah. Do you have any specific favorite album of them all? Or are they like one that the needle just wore out on?
Well, I'm not so much an album guy as I am like as a pseudo musician. I'm a riff guy, right? Or like the composition of a song. And I can tell you that, you know, that riff that, Jimmy Page wrote for Ramble On, even though it doesn't sound, it's not like, you know, technically so complex. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, it still makes the hair on my arms stand up when I hear it, because it's just such a great song. It's such a great riff.
Well, we're in fine form tonight because we got Mikey D, who's a musician too, and then we got Papa Gig, and I use that term loosely.
Yeah, better.
So, have you two join in, Mikey D or Papa Gig? What do we got? Have you played some Zeppelin or Pretenders riffs on those guitars of yours?
I try. Not very successfully most of the time, but I try.
Yep.
I do not. I just kind of just make my own thing. I'm just strumming chords and making my thing. But I thought this was tough because I love the Pretenders. I know I spoke highly of them on the last bracket. And their first two albums, wow. And if we're, you know, we're just doing this top three albums, I agree with you, Patty C.
The
first two records, well, the first three, because 1, 2, and Learning to Crawl are great records. But, they're going up against a heavyweight. And, you know, I have to go with Zeppelin. You know, I'll go with the riffs, like Mike said, and I'm going with Led Zeppelin 1, 2, and 4. So I'm taking almost the first three albums, the first four albums. That Led Zeppelin 4 hit me as a little kid. My buddy listening to that. And, but even the Pretenders, you know, I told the story about, you know, skipping basketball practice and getting in trouble for my coach, see him at Muhlenberg College.
That was a great story.
Yeah. But, Zeppelin they were just masters. All four of them, they were masters. They're tough to beat. So Pretenders, tough matchup. They lose by a hair.
Yep. How about you, Mikey D?
Yeah, I think I got to agree. I mean, I've been trying to think of a reason why I could vote for the Pretenders to advance, because I'd really like to see them advance. And they're both great bands. And you know, the one thing I think Chrissy Hynde has going for her is, I mean, she's still doing it. I mean, the guys in Led Zeppelin are still doing it to some extent, but not as Led Zeppelin. I mean, the Pretenders are still out there and doing it. So I give her a lot of props for that too. Yeah, I think Led Zeppelin, in my mind, has got to advance. It's a tough draw for Chrissy and all the band members that she's had over the years.
Exactly. How about you, YOLO?
You know, I was a big fan of the song "Brass in Pocket."
Yes, very nice.
But you know, I almost wish the Pretenders had 5 or 6 more songs like that. In my opinion, they don't. And when you look at Led Zeppelin, they just have such a wide range of killer songs that go on and on. I'd have to vote for Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, you know, after Physical Graffiti, you know, President's Song remains the same. But then they come out with In Through the Outdoor and then Coda right after that, you know. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough as these bands, especially I think it's, you know, like Led Zeppelin, it was the same guys. So after a while, they got pissed off at, they didn't want to be in the studio. Like, they were friends early and then maybe they weren't friends later, but they still came back and started writing some great stuff. That's a push all the way through. But we give, I don't know. I think in this round, we have to give parting gifts to the losers. And I think if we gave one to Chrissy Hynde, she would look at it. And if it was a nice day, don't you think she would say thank you? But if she was pissed, she'd just throw it away.
She'd
right?
On and strum a chord, baby.
Yeah, she'd throw it away no matter what. If she was.
Yeah, exactly.
She'd throw
exactly.
It in her face.
So now the next two, we got Jimi Hendrix against The Clash. This is these are completely two different ones. You got strong 3-4 albums. So you got Hendrix with Are Your Experience, Electric Ladyland. You know, you could put the other one before that. You could put Bold and Access and then Band of Gypsies in there. But then you got The Clash. And even though they only put a few out, you got Clash, Give Them Enough Rope, London Calling, Sandinista, Comeback Rock, and then Cut the Crap. And Artie, you had some great stuff 2 weeks ago. I think you went into the basement and grabbed some albums, because you
had them all, and they're all solid albums. You know, and I also shared the last time what I thought was so when I think it's Chuck D was putting together Public Enemy. He modeled Public Enemy after The Clash. Because he viewed them as an intellectual band that actually had a message behind their music, which I thought was interesting. And he has a whole podcast devoted to The Clash where he talks about that. So Clash all the way.
Yeah. And we know Papa Gig too. I see your thumbs up there. You know, Jimmy passed early, you know, and who knows? But, you know, Arctic Experience, Purple Haze, Manic Depression, Hey Joe, When Cries Mary, Fire, you know, Foxy Lady, you know, you're 17, you buy that at a record store and you're like, oh, I'll get in a car and I'll go to Woodstock because he's playing there. Right.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. For me, that was 14 and London Calling was out, and, you know. And 13, and my brother was playing Give Him Enough Rope in the first Clash record. And yeah, so for me, it's The Clash. Even though Hendrix, I feel like I'm supposed to vote for Hendrix on a technical and amazing, because he blows everybody out of the water. But The Clash, they just resonate with me. I like Artie. He pulled out, if I remember, he pulled out a Black Market Clash. The Clash could do reggae like nobody's business. Some of the reggae covers, Police and Thieves, Armageddon Time, they did great reggae covers, but then they're just straight out rock and roll. Their first three records.
One of those albums I pulled that had a cover of Pressure Drop on it. That is awesome.
Yeah. So for me, it's Joe Strummer, Mick Jones, Paul Simonon, The Clash.
Yep.
Beating Hendrix by it's just like the opposite of Zeppelin and Pretenders. They beat him by a hair this time. The young guys beat the classic guys.
Yeah, Mikey D.
Yeah, I I think I'd have to agree just as far as like staying power goes. I think Hendrix was such an innovator, and I think that the number of musicians that he influenced at that stage in rock and roll's evolution, I mean, being part of Woodstock and, you know, the Beatles sort of idolized Hendrix and all those other, you know, classic rock and roll just, you know, icons and legends just kind of looked up to him. But I still think the Clash is just, you know, they weren't maybe quite as innovative, but I think they got a little more staying power. I think their stuff's really still pretty, pretty relevant and, you know, enjoyable to listen to. I think Hendrix is a little more timely. Not that his is relevant too, but I think I got to go with the Clash.
Yeah. Big Mike.
So I think you always have to give it to a band that is able to kind of engage audiences with just three instruments, right? All they had was the Clash. All they had were just a guitar, drums, and a bass. And in when they did that, they were also – I mean, it wasn't just like rock and roll. Like they had like a reggae vibe to them. There was like some funk. There was like a ska, like early ska almost. Like I don't know. I might be wrong there, but they had like all of these weird sounds coming from them, and so they were really interesting in that way. When I told my brother that I was going to have a son, he was like, "You should name him Joe Strummer." And so for about 24 hours, you know, my son was going to be named Joe Strummer Morrow. I mixed that, but then there's Hendrix, right? And so, like, I think he doesn't have the staying power in so much as he like the albums and the ability to like play now, right? He never saw him grow old, but like every guitarist wants, like, you know, it mimics him in some way. Sometimes it's subtle, sometimes it's just overt, right? But it seems like every guitarist uses him as sort of the template for a foundation of good guitaring. So it's a tough,
you know, he wanted me, they put him headliner last day at Woodstock, and he pushed up the start time. And there were only like 25,000-30,000 people there when he played.
He was also, I mean, this might be widely known, but just in case it's not, like he was so shy too. He wasn't like a diva. He, when he played and he sang, he didn't want anyone to see his voice. So he'd take great measures so that people couldn't see his face when he was singing. It's just such a shame that he's gone. I don't want to misrepresent my skill in any way as a musician, but as someone who chose the guitar as my instrument, I have to go with Jimi Hendrix.
This is difficult. You can't even make a bracket where you put people at the same, the years and the stuff like that. And this is the way it works. And hey, hats off to Hendrix, but hats off to the Clash because they, hey, the Clash are going through. So the next two, Metallica, ZZ Top. Does anyone have anything that they're like, oh, I am a ZZ Top fan through and through, so they're going through? Who wants to chime in first on this? Because I think this is interesting. I guess no one wants to chime in because I think we're all voting for somebody. It might not be ZZ Top.
Yolo might be able to speak better this, right? Because it sounds like you're closer to Connecticut than any of us in New Haven, where it's the pizza capital of the world, right? And so you can go to Frank Pepe's and you can go to Sally's, which are like, you know, 10 feet away from each other. And, you know, people will die, you know, saying this is the best pizza in the world. This feels a little bit like that. This competition, right? Like, you know, they're all good, right? Yeah. They're all good pizza. But we've got to choose one. Sure. So I'll go first. I'm going to go with Metallica. And this comes down to me liking, you know, this type of pizza better than just another type. Even though they're all good, Metallica just speaks my soul. You know, like the song "Fade to Black" is like this anthem. You know, one, if you've listened to one, it's about this guy with PTSD. It's like this rock ballad that starts off really sad and morose, and then, you know, just drives in your head like thunder. And they continue to do it over the over decades. And so for that reason, I am voting for Metallica.
And how about you, Papa Gig?
This is a matchup that I don't feel strongly about, so I definitely would defer to some of the other guys. I feel like my vote should count like for a half, you know.
Okay.
But I like your description, Pat. Like the season top, I just kind of dig that Texas kind of boogie woogie blues that they had in a lot of their songs and their style of playing. I'm not a big fan of the just Metallica sound. Just doesn't get me as much. Their riffs and so on. I haven't spent as much time with the lyrics. Mike, you kind of make me you had a good sales pitch. You kind of want to make me spend time with their lyrics because I have a sales pitch for YOLO to spend some time with some of the early Pretenders records. I want to recommend.
Yeah.
ZZ Top. Just their riffs and their style of playing hits me harder. So I get the ZZ Top gets the nod for me.
Yeah. And YOLO, who what do we got on this one?
You know, I'm not much of a fan of ZZ Top. To me, they're a little too commercial, a little too studio, a little too more yep. about selling records than being original and maybe true to the man. I don't know about true to themselves. But I've never been much of a Metallica fan either, but I think I would lean towards Metallica for their originality and power in their music.
How about you, Mikey D?
I'm gonna lean ZZ Top. I think kind of like Papa Gig said. I think their type of music kind of speaks to me a little more. I think it's I don't want to say more it lower common denominator. It's gonna please more people. I think Metallica's got a certain group of fans and type of music
sure.
they play doesn't really please everybody. I mean, ZZ Top was. And that's kind of what makes Metallica kind of attractive, too, because they are kind of innovative and they don't really give a shit what anybody else thinks, really. They're going to play what they want to play. But ZZ Top, I think they are considered to be a little more commercial, but I think it was sort of just they were just the right place at the right time with MTV and capturing that magic and capitalizing on that whole dynamic of developing their little, spinny guitars, the spinning furry guitars and the long beards. And I mean, they totally just killed it with that. And that just took them to the stratosphere as far as, popularity and success. So I think I got to lean ZZ Top.
You know, TD said it well last week. Yeah, Eliminator, Afterburner and Recycler, like three albums. I can see them put the first one out. And because their producer or they were like, hey, we got to get a little different. But then, after the tour, they go back into the studio and let's say Gibbons is saying, oh, I got this. We're going to do a religious song. And they were like, what are you crazy? We're going to do the same album we just did because that's going to sell and we're going to go on another tour. Metallica to me is the Grateful Dead of heavy metal nowadays where it's like, uh-oh, I know it's scripted at a Metallica show because they get, but it's like, okay, get ready. Here's a 17 minute jam. And if the crowd's going crazy, we're going to turn it to 19 minutes. So when it comes to that, and Sandman, one of my favorite songs, I used to crank that in my car. Not that I didn't crank all the ZZ Tops, but I got to put Metallica through. And with only five guys tonight, that's the ticket, if you know what I mean.
I will say, your show, Pat. There's a documentary on Metallica, and it talks about James Hetfield's he had to quit the band for a little while. He's been in and out of rehab.
Yeah,
and it paints them in such a diva light. You think they're these hard guys, but like they just had like a therapist travel around with them and ask them like, well, how do you guys feel about the sound check? And it, like, just made them just seem like, I'm not anti-therapy. The way that they were talking about their feelings was kind of conflicted with what I wanted them to be.
Sure.
And it's such an interesting documentary. I recommend it.
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, we got a Metallica going through there. And then next we have David Bowie against Joan Jett. And this is – I wouldn't call David Bowie the shortstop of your baseball team, but he's the left fielder that will always hit 350, and he doesn't complain. And he sits on the – maybe every once in a while he wears his hat backwards or he colors his hair or he grows the beard when the coach doesn't want it. But Joan – to me, Joan Jett is that utility right fielder that is always looking for a spot on the team. Jones had some great years, but it seems like David Bowie has had a longer career. What do you think about that, Yolo? You know, you got David Bowie, Joan Jett.
I think I shared with you, I saw Joan Jett like 2 years ago at an agricultural fair, kind of the biggest one in our area here. And she sounded good, and she kind of cracked me up because she was still full of energy. I don't know how old she is, but the black leather jacket.
She's fit. So I'm 57. She's like 59.
Wow, I didn't realize that she's close a little to older our than age. Me.
I think so. Yeah, yeah.
But she was running around the stage and really rocking it out with a lot of energy. But I just think the matchup against David Bowie just might not be fair to her.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's another rough one.
Well, I'll have to go with David Bowie.
Perfect. Mikey D, who do you got?
Yeah, I'm going to go with, I got to go with Bowie too. I mean, again, it's just a tough matchup. I mean, Jones had a good run. I think she's commendable for sure. But I mean, you're going up against David Bowie. I mean, I think that's a tough matchup for sure.
And she'll throw the award, like the participation award back at us too.
Exactly.
How about you, Papa Ging?
Yeah, I love Joan Jett's rock and roll attitude. I love her spirit. You know, I like your baseball comparison, Pat. I think Joan Jett might be the first one off the bench. You know, if somebody dusted up one of your hitters, she'd be starting the ball.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah.
And I would think, Bowie, you can almost play him in any position too, though, because all the different stuff he made. Yeah, he started out as like a folky, reinvented himself.
Yep.
With the glam rock and everything. His last record, geez, he recruited jazz musicians that he saw in Greenwich Village, and they made that amazing last record, that Black Star record.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, though, I always love bands like when they have a period of time where I think they're just burning so bright and so hot, and yet he didn't fizzle out. So for me, it's three Bowie records in a row that I think just kill it.
One of those?
I'm going with 71 to 73. I'm going with Hunky Dory in 71. I love the Ziggy Stardust record. That is amazing. Yeah. In 72, and then Aladdin Sane in 73. I think those are three great records in 3 years. His guitar player back then, because he's had so many different musicians. Mick Ronson, I think his guitar player was amazing. His riffs and just his play with Bowie, I just love that early 70s period. So for me, it's Bowie with a big win, but Joan Jett for her rock and roll attitude. Got to give her props.
Sure. Yeah, you know, in that time frame, I love Diamond Dogs. That was one, you know, only because it didn't have that many hits, but just the arrangement on Diamond Dogs, I'm like, I've never heard that before. That's kind of pretty funky, you know, just the way they put everything together, you know, and stuff. How about you, Big Mike? What do you got?
Well, growing up in the Lehigh Valley, there was this CD store called Tunes. And it was like this cavernous, like completely disorganized CD store. And like you could find bootlegs and it was like this great place to go to find affordable music. And I remember walking in and being like, could you guys point me in the direction of this song where the guy like flies out into space and then kind of like the spaceship like doesn't come back and they were like, oh, you're looking for Space Oddity. And that was like, so for sentimental reasons, like I feel like I've got to go with David Bowie. Although I will say with Joan Jett, you know, everyone has that song that prior to like learning an instrument, they would play the tennis racket. And I Love Rock and Roll was my tennis racket song. It's like, this is it. Like I'd be in my bedroom just like playing the tennis racket. But then David Bowie was able to follow up Space Oddity with all these other like magical songs. So that was like Space Oddity was like my marijuana gateway, song to all of the other Bowie. And so I've got to push Bowie ahead.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree on that. And you know, honestly, the Let's Dance album or the CD that came out. I read an article where when they recorded that, one of the songs on that album, I forget what it was, he kept going to the producer. He was like, no, I want my voice to pick up harder and harder, or further and further. And they set three microphones up in the studio. So when he sang and he sang louder, the next one picked it up, and then the next one, and they mixed it all into one. And listen, and I think I said this earlier on, when David Bowie can just be walking down a snow-covered street and knock on a door of a classic singer and then walk in and sing Little Drummer Boy for a Christmas special. Come on. That's, you can't beat that, right? You can't beat that with a stick. So yeah,
I think that was Stevie Ray Vaughan. Stevie Ray Vaughan on Let's Dance too.
So yeah, so we got David Bowie moving on, and now we got the next two. We got the Beatles against Bob Seger. Let's just you know, Ramblin' Gamblin' Man, Beautiful Loser, Katmandu. Like, I don't think the Beatles ever sang about going to Katmandu, did they? Which is an incredible song. But when I talk, and I know we all know who we're going to pick on this one, but this is another rough one. It's, you know, you got a little guy going against the big guy. And I see you shaking your head there, Papa Gig. You know, what, you tell us some stories. What do you got?
Oh, bless Bob Seger, but I think we got to focus on the Fab Four on this one. I think it'd be fun. Like, what are your three favorite Beatles records? I think it's a hard one to pick, you know? But yeah, just their body work. And really, it wasn't over a long period of time. Really, you know, I know they were helped because they weren't, you know, running out and touring in between records, especially in the second half of their career. But yeah, I picked my top three as Revolver and Abbey Road are always in my top three Beatles records. And then my third one, you know, sometimes it's the White Album. Lately, it's been Let It Be. Their last record, they kind of got back to the basics, like real simple stuff, but it hits me. It's just simple, really good music, you know. And I think I like that George Harrison was more involved later in the career. So between the White Album and Let It Be, those are that's my rotating third favorite. You know, Sgt. Pepper, I'd be raised about, and Sgt. Pepper's great, but it's almost not as accessible. You know, it's so grand, and so it's amazing. But give me Revolver, Abbey Road, Let It Be, or White Album. I'll be fine. Put me on my desert island, and I'll be all right.
And, you know, compared to the two, and I'm sure you can all agree with this, and somebody wants to check in, even though the Beatles they didn't want to tour, and the reason why they didn't want to tour was the sound system sucked. They couldn't even hear themselves. So they were like, screw this. Let's just make music. And they could put the time in the studio, of course, with, you know, their producers and they put out great stuff. And I'm not saying that they're better than Bob Seger because they were in the studio, but when you listen, I would write a term paper in an hour and hand it in. But, you know, if you spent 17 days on it, it probably was a little better than the first time. Don't you think so, YOLO? What do you got, YOLO?
I absolutely
on
think
one?
So. Yeah.
Right? What are your three favorite Beatles albums there, YOLO?
You know, I don't know if I know the names of their albums well enough. I've always respected the Beatles for sure, but I've never like really dove in and listened. Obviously, I've heard their music, but you know what I'm saying? And listened to their albums front to back.
Yeah. Any favorite Beatle before we move on to Big Mike or Mikey D? Who's your favorite Beatle, YOLO? Do you have one?
Mine? Probably John Lennon. Just, you know, living in New York City.
Yeah. I hear you. And I know... I mean, Mikey D would play it at a bar, right?
I didn't always play it. I would just sing it.
Oh, okay.
Usually pretty drunk singing it. And didn't do it anywhere near the justice it deserved. But I used to think that that Paul was my favorite Beatle, but I think George Harrison's now become my favorite Beatle. I've really grown to admire him and the things he did and what he stood for and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's kind of no contest. I mean, Bob Seger's great and has, you know, been around, but
yeah,
I mean, come on, you're going up against the Beatles here. I mean,
yeah,
serious.
Exactly. Big Mike, what do you got?
You know, there are some people who grow up, like you hear musicians or like famous people being like, oh, you know, growing up, there was always music in my house. That was not the case in my house. Like, there was there wasn't a lot of music in my house growing up, but there was Bob Seger. It was like this weird, like my dad was just into Bob Seger. And I was like, heard a lot of Night Moves. Turn the Page. And so
Feel Like a Number.
Yeah. Like a rock. I was like, I'm going to buy a Chevy when I grow up because Bob Seger is singing like a rock. You know? But then I learned about the Beatles. And so the sentimentality of Bob Seger, even though I like him, although I feel kind of burned by Bob Seger, I really wanted to see him live. And then a couple of years ago, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, maybe sooner, it blurs together, but he went to go, he had like a reunion tour, like a farewell tour. And I was like, oh, it'd be neat to see Bob Seger. And the tickets were like $150, even in the nosebleeds. It was a total money grab. Uh-huh. And I thought, oh man, like that kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. So even though I enjoy his music, I mean, it's kind of bringing a knife to a gunfight here. So the Beatles move on here.
You know, I was never a big Beatles fan. And then over the years I was, and then, you know, I'm going to, even though I love Paul, the way Paul plays the bass, I've been watching some YouTube videos where they dissect Ringo Starr's drumming, and he was like a jazz drummer. And when you watch this stuff later on, and these musicians are like, this is how Ringo played it. And the way he positioned his hands, and it was a jazzy feel to it. And then they were like, okay, now we're going to isolate Ringo's drums on this song. And you're like, it is like classic on. It's almost like technical. I'm going to have to push the Beatles on too, but Bob Seger, I love the Bob. I can, you know, windows down in the truck, you know, driving down the road. And then, you know, especially I've never been to Detroit, but if I ever drive my truck through Detroit, I'm going to roll down the windows and just crank Bob Seger, not the Beatles. Next two bands, The Faces and Frank Zappa. You know, Faces didn't have much. And then, you know, when they all left, Jeff Beck went his way. And then Rod Stewart went his way. But no, you have Frank Zappa. I didn't even put the I don't know. I really wish we had DJ on, because DJ knows a little Zappa. He couldn't make it tonight. So who does anybody want to chime in first on Zappa on these two? Because T.D. Whitman's gone and nothing. No, so Papa's out.
I'll chime in a little bit on Zappa.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to vote for Zappa.
Yeah.
I'm going to vote for Zappa. So there's a documentary out now. I think it's on Netflix called Zappa. And I can't say that I'm a huge fan, but I do appreciate his ingenuity. I appreciate the fact that he was completely self-taught. He never took one lesson. The documentary kind of portrayed him as being kind of a jerk to the people in the band. He was very, very stern and really all business and was totally about the music. But what was kind of cool was, you know, he came out with his first album called Freak Out in 1966. And in the late 60s, the European invasion was happening with the Beatles and the Stones, and all those guys were coming to America, and they all wanted to come meet Frank because they thought his album was really cool. And I think that really influenced the Beatles and Sgt. Pepper. So, you know, I think Frank influenced a lot of other people. The other thing I thought was really interesting is that he was always continuously writing music and composing, not just rock and roll and weird, freaky, bizarre crap, but a lot of classical music. And that was his sort of his passion, I think, late in his life, was he was composing orchestra music. And there's a ton of unreleased music that he still has even yet to release. And I think his family is going to slowly start to crank out albums. So, I mean, you know, Rod Stewart and, you know, The Faces, they got their props, but I got to go with Frank on this one. Yeah, the other thing, if I could throw one more thing in about Frank Zappa, give him some more props. Back in like the 80s, if you remember, they were having a big thing in Congress about trying to restrict, you know, illicit lyrics and profanity on albums and stuff. And Frank Zappa went before Congress and I mean, even though he named his kids Dweezil and Moon Unit and who knows what else, I mean, he was so intelligent and just, you know, totally made Congress look like a bunch of idiots and really stood up for musicians having the ability to, you know, free speech and write what they wanted to write and let the people listen to it, you know, let people decide what they should listen to, not the government. So I give him props for that, too.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. And YOLO.
You know, I've never been too much of a fan, I think, of either band, but I would go with Frank Zappa.
Yeah, 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 I have to agree. And I take that into consideration as we move Mr. Zappa through. And the next two, I'm a little light on Warren Zevon, only because I only know his real early stuff. But they're going against the Ramones. And this might be a tough one for Papa Gig because I know you're highly rated on those two. Yeah. So start us off with that.
Real quick, one thing I quote from him, I think he said on that Letterman episode, and maybe he was the first to say it, but he told Letterman, enjoy every sandwich, you know, because he knew he was passing, and enjoy every sandwich. So I think of that a lot with the little things and just focus and enjoying those little things in life. So little Warren Zevon wisdom. Yes, that last record I thought was great. His early stuff, lyrically, you know, the stuff he sang about and wrote about, you know, lawyers, guns, and money, too. Even his voice, you know, he was kind of a wild man. Just he was interesting. But that said, you know, like I said, the Ramones are my game changer. So just to go home, rocket to Russia, and that was my game changer. So, yeah, Zevon, great. Love his stuff, but I got to get the runs real quick today, going to work. It might have been too early, but is it called Bonzo Goes to Bitburg? It's a more obscure late period Ramones song where they wrote a song about Ronald Reagan going to Eastern Europe and called Bonzo Goes to Bitburg, or my head just turned upside down. And oh my gosh, Joey Ramone was cranking it at 7:15 this morning. And I thought, you know, I'm probably playing this too loud. I'm probably not ready to hear this, but it was my cup of coffee. It was my espresso in one. And it was late in the Ramones, and yeah, great stuff. And it just reminded me of who I'm voting for tonight. So going for Ramones pretty hard on this one.
Now, Artie, YOLO, you were a DJ there back in the day. Out of those two guys, you know, what did one album, one song get the bar rocking
more than the other? I Want to Be Sedated is that, you know, definitely a bar classic. Sure. You know, Blitzkrieg Bop, Rockaway Beach, but I Want to Be Sedated for sure. You know, and I think someone mentioned this before, you got to give the Ramones props because they didn't disappear. It's really common to see a high school kid with a Ramones shirt on. People are still listening to them. And I just think that just speaks to the quality of what they produced and what they, you know, did.
Sure. Started in 76 and last one was in 97. And, you know, I could see if you were like, okay, I'm not throwing Men at Work under the bus, but I'm going to throw them under the bus. Great musicians, and they did stuff solo later on, but you put a couple, three albums out, and then you can't put anything out after that. The Ramones are just like, let's just go in a studio and just record another one. And they ripped out another album and put it out, and then they toured. And people kept following them.
But, you know, I have to say this. So when I was going to the Suffolk County Community College, at like 1 in the afternoon, the Ramones were playing on the front steps of the library. And there was maybe 10 people watching them, and people just, you know, like I think in their peak, they were not that big. I mean, we saw them, I think, together at Stony Brook University in the gym, and it was fairly packed. But, you know, at their peak, they're taking gigs on the front stoop of the community college library. And I find that amazing.
Yep. And I'm wondering if they're still just traveling in a van, or do they have a big tour bus? Who knows? Big Mike, what do you got on those two, Ramones and Warren Zevon?
I remember watching Warren Zevon on David Letterman and having that and seeing that interview, and it like struck a chord with me. Like, I think about Warren Zevon and the statement "Enjoy every sandwich" is like synonymous. I mean, he did so much great work, but he had this silly statement. It was so poignant because he knew he was going to die. He passed away gracefully, you know. That really always stuck with me. But when the Ramones, we're talking about all these bands here that were influenced by the Ramones, you know, Metallica, The Clash. I bet Nirvana probably was, if you talk to Dave Grohl, you know, and the members. So I think the Ramones probably beat out Warren Zevon here in terms of, you know, bracketology here.
Sure. And Mikey D?
Yep. I don't have any major comments on either band, really. But I got to go with the theme here. I think the Ramones got to move on forward.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm with A on that. So now we got Genesis against Stone Temple Pilots. Crazy. We got an early band that was progressive rock, did a crazy stage show with Peter Gabriel, but then later on they go to three. And then I think that one album, it was three, something like that. And then, but personally after that, you know, their early stuff is progressive. But as a long-term band, you know, they get Duke coming out, then Abacab, and then, you know, like we were talking before, they hit that MTV era. I was a DJ at Potsdam State, and I played a hell of a lot of Stone Temple Pilots. But I did not play much Genesis. But we were an alternative rock and roll band. But now later on, I only listened to Genesis with the three, not Peter Gabriel, because I just never got into them early. Were any of you guys into Genesis early and are going to pick them to go through? Papa Giggs, no. Mike D, Big D, my Big Mike, no. Mikey D.
You know what's interesting? If this was Peter Gabriel against Stone Temple Pilots, I would go with Peter Gabriel. But yeah, Genesis against Stone Temple Pilots, I would go Stone Temple Pilots.
Yeah, I remember watching Headbangers Ball on MTV and seeing the live performance of that Plush, like that it's become iconic now, the acoustic performance of Plush, and just being like, what is this Jedi magic? Like, you know, you kept hearing about what a mess Scott Weiland was, but he was able to sound so pure and magical there when he was singing. It's such a shame that he passed away. It's such a gift.
Yeah. Yeah. And the acoustic version of that is really nice. Or just correct me on this one, Papa Gig. Is it just him doing acoustic on that solo? I think I saw it on Spotify.
Now, yeah, I thought it was in a band thing. I might be wrong, but I thought it was the whole band thing. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So I said before, I think the DeLeo brothers, they, you know, Weiland was great, but those DeLeo brothers, they were, you know, musically, they, you know, they were got the group going.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And Mikey D?
You know, I think I'm going to go against the grain here. I think I would vote for Genesis just based on my background and when I grew up and what was relevant at the time. I mean, I think STP was awesome. And this is another tough decision, I think, because you kind of it's a little bit of apples and oranges. I mean, you know, STP is definitely rocking. I mean, Interstate Love Song is one of my favorite songs. I think that song just kicks ass. But Genesis was everywhere in the freaking 80s. I mean, their album Genesis was just, you know, that was a kick-ass album in my mind. Not kick-ass, I should say. That's probably not the right phrase. I think STP is more kick-ass. Genesis was probably more, you know, just like popular. I'd probably go with Genesis.
Yeah, you know, I think we'll have to go with Stone Temple going through. Next two bands, Jackson Browne, Bruce Springsteen. Who's got a story?
I don't know if you guys heard this story, but it cracked me up. Like 2 years ago or a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. You know, Bruce lives right outside Asbury Park. He bought a motorcycle from Billy Joel. Did you guys hear that story? Okay, all right. That was all over the news.
The tequila story?
The what?
The tequila story?
No, he bought a motorcycle from Billy Joel and it broke down on the side of the highway while he was riding it.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, so he buys this tricked out bike from Billy Joel. It breaks down. Now he's Bruce Springsteen sitting on the side of the highway. Yes. A couple bikers pulled over, helped him out. They couldn't get the bike going, so Bruce jumped on the back of their bike, and they drove to a bar. And they drank together while Bruce was waiting for his ride to come. Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good story. Go ahead, Papa Gig.
Because that reminds me of the more recent story. He got cited for driving under influence, but then it got dropped. He was at that Sandy Hook, the National Seashore area at Sandy Hook. I forget what it's officially called. But I guess there were some fans there, and he posed and he had a shot of tequila, and I guess a cop was watching. And he was just being nice and had a shot of tequila with these fans, and then he got on his bike and he drove off, and the cop pulled him over, and he cited him for driving under the influence. And the charges eventually got dropped because he only had one shot, and his level was .01, .02. But yeah, I felt bad for him because he got smeared the news, Bruce Springsteen DUI charge, but he's just being cool and having a shot of tequila with his fans. You know?
Even more than that, though, the Jeep launched a huge commercial for the Super Bowl. Yep. And then it got pulled right after the Super Bowl because of that DWI.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and my three for Bruce: Born to Run, Darkness on the Edge of Town, and Born in the USA. And I've left a couple out on his early days. It seems like he has longevity. And now Jackson Brown has longevity because he's still writing song, but for hits and work, I don't know. Bruce just has it a little more. What do you think, Mikey D?
Yeah, I think I got to agree with you. I mean, when I was in high school, I dated a girl who was a huge Bruce fan. At that point in my life, I was like, this stinks. I mean, this guy's just, Born in the USA. I mean, I get it. So it's cool. But what's this Nebraska and this river stuff? I mean, it just didn't speak to me at that point in my life. I was like, what is this? But as I've grown older, I think I've come to appreciate Bruce a lot more and his body of work and what he's done over time. And like I think we talked about in previous episodes, I mean, his live shows, I've never had the privilege of seeing him live, but I hear he just rocks the house and plays for, hours and hours. So I think, that alone stands head and shoulders above a lot of other artists. So I'd vote him through for sure.
And Big Mike?
I mean, if you've ever watched his Netflix special, man, it's so great to see him, tell a story, even though it's, highly produced. But, man, what a good storyteller. And for that alone, he gets the nod from me.
Next two bands, Judas Priest, Eric Clapton. We got some heavy metal against a guy that has stood this test of time. I don't know. I'm putting him through only because the guy knows he knows everyone. He's played with everyone. I know he's a little older than the guys in Judas Priest, but they're different types of music. But Mikey D, what do you got on that? I think you're gonna go Clapton, right?
Yeah, no question.
Yeah.
For me, it's Clapton all the way. I don't really have much more to say about it. I mean, he's the god, right? Eric Clapton is god, isn't that what they say?
Yeah, he is the god. YOLO?
I Shot the Sheriff. I just have to go with Clapton on this one.
Yeah, 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 it's plain and simple. And Papa Gig?
Yeah, definitely Clapton. I had a discussion with the guy at work who's been listening to the podcast lately, so we have a new fan. He was talking about the matchup, and he was saying, like, Cream and Derek of the Dominoes. And I said, well, totally slam dunk them. But I said, no, this is Eric Clapton. He said, well, what do you mean? Eric Clapton is Eric Clapton. But I said, no, it's his solo career. It's not his, because he got inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with those different incarnations, right? So, but yeah, even his solo stuff, made it a little bit harder for me, but nah, it's still Clapton, still Slowhand. His old the bluesy stuff. So the newer records, with the Robert Johnson stuff is also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy could really
play. Really good stuff.
And Big Mike.
Yeah. Eric Clapton is one of those people who's not showy in his guitar playing. He's kind of, subtle in his greatness, and he can just kind of let you know he's there. And I agree, Chris. It like his that From the Cradle when he did all that blues album. I was lucky enough to see him at the Spectrum when Clarence Gatemouth Brown opened up for him, and it was just like all blues. And I remember Eric Clapton kind of walked on the stage like he, I don't know how old he was, maybe 55 or 60 at the time, but he just maybe younger actually, but he just kind of walked on the stage like he was a teenager, and it was like this moment in my life seeing this legend just kind of stroll onto the stage, and then he just killed it on the guitar. So he moves forward for me.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, we knew that was going to happen. And now the next two, this could be crazy. This is longevity a little. AC/DC against Soundgarden. Who's going to start us off with this? A Papa Gig, maybe?
You know, the music I like, you know, I hate the word grunge, but, you know, I feel like I should vote for Soundgarden. But, you know, Soundgarden's one band in that era that never – I didn't cling on to them as much. You know, I do appreciate them. I like them. But AC/DC, you know, I grew up with them as a little kid. You know, my brother was bringing home Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap and High Voltage and If You Want Blood, You've Got It. And some were confiscated by my mom. She was pretty strict with the records we listened to. She didn't like the album art. And remember, she didn't like the song She's Got Balls. She did not approve of that song. We look at the song titles of the records. And so she, whichever record She's Got Balls on was confiscated due to the title. But, yeah, we've talked about that before. Like, have they really reinvented their sound? Probably not a whole lot, but it's rock and roll and it works. You know, rock and roll is not that complicated. Angus Young, come on. He's one of the great rock and roll characters ever. You know, Bon Scott, Brian Johnson, they're both great. I lean more toward Bon Scott, but yeah, AC/DC, they're just a fun, great rock and roll band.
Yeah, and YOLO.
Hey, I got to just share this story. This is not music related, but I'm going to share it. So there's a younger teacher. She's 27. She teaches across the hallway from me. And she was telling me that her favorite drinking game of all time is called Surprise. And that they take nips. Everyone just buys a bunch of wacky nips. And they put it in this bag. And then you reach in the bag and whatever you drink, you have to drink. Pat and I used to play a much tamer version of that game with beer in a garbage can.
Oh. And whatever you pulled in, like, and it was pure ice. When I lived in Richmond, you would put your arm in, it would be frozen, but you would grab, and you could grab how you could keep. You were like, that's a Grolsch, that's a this, that's a that, and whatever you pulled out, big you drank.
You know,
yeah, and you drank it. Those are the good.
But I was
days.
Like, wow, this 27-year-old girl is playing that game with nips? Like, what?
So you got AC/DC going on too, YOLO, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yep, and Big Mike?
Soundgarden. So Soundgarden, for me, is separated. It's Soundgarden, but then there's Chris Cornell, right? And so Chris Cornell is one of my greatest disappointments or letdowns in terms of not – having seen him live when he was alive. And I know that was his solo career. And that's separate from Soundgarden, but I feel like they never took off the way that Pearl Jam or a lot of the other bands did. And I don't know, for whatever reason, I'll never understand it. But I got to go with AC/DC. They just kick ass every time, right? Who else has a guitarist that wears like a velvet schoolboy suit, you know, and just sweats full time, you know? It's just awesome every time. So AC/DC for me.
Yep. And Mikey D?
Yeah, it's AC/DC.
Yeah.
No question.
All the way. Last two bands, everybody. We have Little Feat against Pearl Jam. Now, we talked about Little Feat the last time.
This is a tough
one. I'm going to say their first three albums, or the albums that I've picked, Sailing Shoes, Easy to Slip, Cold, 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 Triple Face Bookie, Willin, Sailing Shoes is on that, Dixie Chicken, Two Trains, Fat Man in a Dap and a Bathtub, and then Feats Don't Fail Me Now, Rock and Roll Doctor, Old Atlanta, you know, Spanish Moon's on that. But then I don't know. You got Pearl Jam, 10 versus Vitality. And these are just mine because I know Papa Gig is a huge Pearl Jam fan. And Mikey D, what do you got for us on those two? Little Feet.
Yeah, I think you and I are aligned, Pat. I was a huge Little Feet fan in college and listened to Dixie Chicken till it was freaking worn out. You know, I just love that album. And I loved all their albums. That was our jam, you know, that was what we all listened to. And then, you know, that was about the time that Pearl Jam kind of came on the scene, was when I was in college and finishing up college. And so, you know, I think it's kind of a flip of a coin for me too, personally, but, I think based on the story that Papa Gig told about meeting Eddie Vedder in Germany and giving the shout out to his son, I think I got to go with Pearl Jam.
Sure. Sure. And YOLO, what do we got?
You know, I'm a big Little Feet fan as well, but it's hard for me to remember, but I think that I saw Little Feet in concert and came away disappointed. And it kind of ruined it a little bit for me. So I'm going to have to go with Pearl Jam.
And Big Mike.
This is going to sound counterintuitive. I don't like if you were to say, hey, let's go to a show tonight and let's decide between Pearl Jam and Little Feet, Giggler would probably shoot me for saying this. But tonight, I would just choose the chillness of Little Feet. Maybe it's my mental state. Maybe it's, you know, the end of a long work week. But in terms of longevity, I mean, like 10 is, I think I've said it before, 10 is in my top 10 albums of all time. And so I think Pearl Jam probably wins in this situation.
And I'm hoping, Papa Gay, you have another Pearl Jam story for us. Come on.
Well, I got a couple for you. But first of all, here, I want to show you guys the picture. Did I show you the picture of when we met Eddie?
No.
So here's the picture outside the Ramones Museum. I don't know, there's some glare here. We've framed. There's the picture of us hanging out.
That's awesome.
I have video real quick. I have video that we were filming. It kind of ruined the Ramones Museum. I was so excited to see the Ramones Museum and I couldn't focus on anything because, you know, Eddie Vedder and I are touring the Ramones Museum steps away from each other. And I couldn't even read. I couldn't even focus because my heart was going too fast. So I actually met a couple of different guys. Here's a funny one. We saw, it's a Pearl Jam related story. We saw their bass player, Jeff Amon, had a side band called Random, RNDM, with Joseph Arthur. I don't know if you know him. He's an interesting guy. Just a three-piece outfit and a drummer that Jeff Amon knew. We saw him in Philadelphia at Union Transfer, I think. Yeah, Union Transfer. And the Foundry, the Foundry at one of the other venues down there. And Pierre Robert and Matt Cord were in line in front of us waiting to meet Jeff Amon after the show. And they were talking and talking and talking. We're all waiting in line. There's this little kid behind us. And they're talking and talking, not, you know, just realizing there's a long line. Talk for a little bit, you know, and then let the next person go. Well, I kept on just muttering stuff. And I was almost picking a fight with Matt Cord because he was talking to Jeff Amon for so long. This little kid waiting to get an autograph after Matt Cord and Pierre Robert, and I was muttering stuff and I was hoping he would hear me. And I was, you know, I was a little, had a couple in me, you know. So luckily I did not get in a fight with Pierre Robert and Matt Cord, you know, for talking too long to Jeff Amon after his side project show. So anyway, you might need to edit that out. That was too long. I'll give you top three Pearl Jam records. For me, actually, I don't want to say obscure. Some of the hardcore Pearl Jam people, No Code, their third record or fourth record, is probably actually my favorite, just as far as just a strong album all the way through. No hits, but just a great record. So No Code is probably my number one. Versus, their second record is probably my number two. And then it's a toss-up between 10 or Vitalogy for my number three. Yeah.
So, yeah, I have to agree. You know, we're pushing Pearl Jam on, and we are ready for the time machine question. And basic and simple, here's the time machine question, everybody. You're going to get in the time machine. Well, we'll all go in the time machine. And when it stops, we are in the we're in the landing bay of the Starship Enterprise, and we get out. I'm going to go with the Mikey D first. We're in the Star Trek Enterprise, and who are we picking? Who are you picking? And what are we listening to?
So I'm gonna go a little obscure here. Maybe I'm gonna pick Dr. McCoy because you know everybody's gonna pick Kirk and Spock. You know, I'm going with Dr. McCoy. And the thing to remember about Dr. McCoy was he always had that little quirky way of speaking, like "But Jim," and he had the little start and stop thing. And I think his favorite band would be Cake, the band Cake, because, you know, they kind of had that style of singing where they just had their little offbeat thing going on. And I think Cake and Dr. McCoy would go well together.
I like it. YOLO, who are you searching out?
I'm just trying to – I think I'll just go with Spock and little Bob Marley.
You got it. Big Mike, who are you searching out?
You know what? I think I'm going to seek out Sulu. And I'm sorry. And we're going to light a spliff, and he is going to throw in some Dear Mr. Fantasy. And it's going to be an extended intro. We're just going to listen to that opening riff for the next half an hour. And we're going to, I don't know, do whatever they do in space. You know, we're going to hit hyperspace and explore some shit. I don't know.
Yeah. Because like he had trouble sometimes, but at the beginning of a tense situation, he would always say like, they are not engaged. And then he would just keep pushing the button, right?
Well, my
and he would keep us cool, right?
Totally. My choice really wasn't born out of knowledge of Star Trek. It was more of George Takei's current, like, you know, pop culture presence. He just seems like a weird guy, you know. So I just want to hang out in the dock with him, you know, and do our thing.
And Papa Gig, who are you choosing?
Well, do I have to pivot now? Because I picked Sulu too, because I thought I'd try to pick someone that no one else was picking. So can I give you a contrasting Sulu idea?
Yeah, go for it.
So I'm not a big Star Trek guy, but I'm picturing Sulu has a garage rock inside. I don't know. I'm just thinking he wants garage rock, and I was thinking all different stuff, but I'm thinking just some raw early White Stripes. I think Sulu's – he's going to let something out that we didn't know that he had. I think there's something in there. We're going to rock out some hardcore early White Stripes with Sulu.
I love it.
Total contrast, you know, but we'll see if he has two sides to him.
Well, I like it. You know, it's funny because I thought everyone was going to pick Spock, a Kirk, but no one did. And I'm not even going to pick him. I'm going straight. No, he probably wasn't that interesting. You know, he was always, I don't know. I'm going straight to the engine room and I'm picking Scotty, and he's going to say, come on, let's go to the lounge. And he's going to push a couple buttons. And you know what he's going to pull up? Some Bay City Rollers from Scotland, because that's his favorite band. Right?
Nice.
Were they from Scotland?
Yes, they were from Scotland.
Oh my God, the Bay really?
City, a Scottish pop rock band. So there you have it. Let's start with Big Mike. Mikey, say – Big Mike, say goodbye to our crew.
Hey, good night, everyone.
Mikey D.
Live long and prosper, everyone.
Like that. Papa Gig.
Good night, everybody. A lot of fun tonight. Looking forward to a lot of hard decisions in our next playoff bracket.
Yes, and YOLO.
Have a great night. Fun as always.
Awesome.